Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's Mike Cal, the show. It's 1025 The Bone, 727-579-1025 or 800-771-1025. One of the most interesting things that TampaBay.com has introduced to Tampa Bay has been the mugshot section of their website, which I would gather is one of the most popular things that is hit every day on their site. It allows you to look at people who have been arrested in the last 48 hours or so. And I do it every day. I go through it during the commercials, and I usually find some people that I know, some people that are like, oh, my God, I know that person from Facebook. Or worse, you know, some people that, like, I could try and play what did they get arrested for, and I'm never right. But I also found out that Mexican folks, and I use Mexican broadly.
Hispanic?
Yes. They have names like Rick Morales got arrested last night.
Okay.
Normal name. Robicel Valeria got arrested last night. Then there is a, and I only see this on the mugshots, a combination of famous Hispanic last names. Humberto Jimenez Gomez. Like, it's either Jimenez or Gomez. He's Jimenez Gomez. And then on the next page, there is Rosendo Ramirez Cruz. Ramirez or Cruz.
Well, now, there is a thing, and I think Spanish being part Puerto Rican can back me up on this. I believe Puerto Rican people sometimes will use their mother's maiden name before the father's
right, name. As a middle, well,
like, don't
yeah.
they do that sometimes?
That I don't know. That sounds
like... Because, like, you could be Ortiz, but so is this guy Ortiz, so then you're Ramirez Ortiz
yeah.
or something, you know.
It's very confusing.
Yeah.
We do have some breaking news.
You're no help, by the way, Spanish. I don't even believe you're part Puerto Rican.
The United States Secretary of State Rex Tillerson has been ousted from his position by President Trump, and he will be replaced by CIA Chief Pompeo.
Mm-hmm.
Man, it's hard to keep a guy in the spot in this White House, man.
Yeah, switching it around a lot.
Tillerson out, Pompeo in as the new Secretary of State. Like, when usually when you get a president, everybody's putting the jobs and they keep it for the 4 to 8 years.
Right, yeah.
Now this guy can't get through... through a whole year without keeping a job. All right, well, Rex Tillerson, it was nice knowing you. Rex Tillerson out, Pompeo in. Is Brad Meltzer on the phone? Let's welcome Brad Meltzer back to the show. Brad, how are you, buddy?
I'm good, brother. How you been?
The whirlwind of publicity for the escape artist, I would imagine, has already begun?
It has begun. We started on CBS this morning, and... Late Night with Seth Meyers, where I got to say the word penis on the air.
Yay! Oh. Everybody likes that.
All right.
Yeah. No, well, that's the thing is, you know, I was on there, and, you know, he was asking me about, you know, studying Dover Air Force Base and morticians and things like that. And I said, you know, the thing is, it sounds like it can be depressing, but these guys are fun, too, because they have, you know, you have to have humor in this whole thing. And what bodies are just really inherently crazily funny because... You know, they poop and they fart, and when you embalm them, things get engorged, so you get a giant penis, right?
Yeah.
And it means that, like, it's not until I die that someone's going to say to me, hey, Brad, you have a giant penis.
Yeah, I heard, who was I listening to yesterday? Oh, it's David Spade was on Howard Stern, and he said, you get a lot of credit for having a huge penis, and he said it's because it's on a small backdrop. And I'm going to try and work that in reverse now. I have a big backdrop. That's
right,
all.
Yeah.
Brad Meltzer is the author of his newest book. Is called The Escape Artist. Now, can I tell you that I am so looking forward to the book, and I also am about to take an 8-hour flight to London this week. So I bought it. I didn't even wait for my free copy. I bought it. And I'm going to read it on my flight there, and hopefully we'll have it done by the end of next week.
That's amazing. Well, you got to call me privately and I want to compare notes because I want to hear what parts you like.
Yeah, I certainly will tell you. I'm going to tell you there's a lot of guests that come on the show that I go, yeah, man, I'll see you at the comedy club this weekend, and I never go. And then they say, I want to watch your movie, and I never watch it. But I have begun to read your books, and I looked forward to this one because you made me read the last one. And anybody, like, I try to dumb it down, like, because a lot of our listeners are like, that's a big, thick-ass book. I'm not reading that book. But I can tell you that it's one of those things that you pick up and you fly right through them. It's written for entertainment. It's they're enjoyable. They're suspenseful. Now, my question to you is, will this one be the movie?
Listen, I hope so. I mean, it starts with my fastest chapter one I've ever had.
I don't know. Chapter one, last time I had the first lady finding a body part in the garden.
This is better. This is, when I start these books, and I'm obsessed with research, right?
Right.
So I basically was on a USO tour. I'm in the Middle East in Kuwait. And they used to bring, six guerrilla writers every year to go entertain. And the funny part was, it was the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders, and then we came in. All the people like, and so, but it was fun. Obviously, honored to do it. But it was there that Dover Air Force Base came on my radar, and of course, I'd heard of Dover. We all know those flag cover coffins that sadly come back when our troops are laid to rest. What I didn't know is that Dover is also the place that handles the biggest cases. So, as an example, when the space shuttle goes down, those bodies go to Dover. When the Pentagon happened in 9/11, all the victims from there went to Dover. It's also where all of our spies across the globe, all our 007s that are out there doing secret missions, they go to Dover too. And it means that Dover's a place full of secrets and mysteries. And
which
I was like,
love.
Man, I gotta get in there.
Yeah.
Right, which I love. And when I went there, though, I've done the tunnels below the White House. I've done cool. So it was just a place until I got there, and I was just humbled. Like, what happened is there, when I watch how they take care of our troops, they'll spend 14 hours reconstructing someone's jaw so that a family can see their son one last time, or rebuilding someone's entire hand because a mother specifically says that she wants to hold her son's hand one last time. Wow. And I was like, you know what, man? These are the real heroes in America that nobody knows about, and I'm going to make them the heroes of my book. And that's where I start. I start with that. I gave them a plot. I said, I want to have a secret note that's left on a body. Like, how do you do it? You ever see one in all the bodies you've worked on? And the guy says, when you're on a plane and the plane's going down, if you do a timing right, that if you write a note and eat it, that the liquids in your stomach can potentially protect the note.
Wow.
And I'm like, that's a crazy story. Which also means, by the way, Mike, that next time you're on a plane that has like turbulence, you're thinking of me.
I'm eating paper unnecessarily, most likely.
Right, no question. You're going to be in like a notebook of it. But the truth was, I was like, cool story. And he's like, it's not a story. It happened on 9/11.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, what are you talking about? And he told me that, this really happened, that on 9/11, one of the bodies came back from the Pentagon, and there was a note inside. And I was like, I got to do the story on that, right? Like, that just made it crazy. So my opening chapter is Nola Brown, one of the best characters I've ever written, that they call her the new girl with the dragon tattoo, which isn't fair to the girl with the dragon tattoo, but it's a very sweet compliment. I'll take it any day.
Sure.
But she dies. She's dead. The government says she's dead, and she's in a plane crash. Her body comes to Dover. They open the body up, and they see a note inside. Her note says, Nola, you were right. Keep running. And you realize Nola's not dead. She's alive. She's on the run. She's the escape artist. And I just ruined chapter one of the book.
You say ruin, but you got me even more excited now to read it. Listen, I don't BS anybody. Actually, I do BS a lot, but I'm not BSing Brad.
Right, yeah.
I am definitely looking forward to reading this book. And now let me ask you, I know that you're into doing promotion for your books, but it seems like this one is more important, and you've done more hustling and earlier than ever before. I feel like either you got something on the hook, or there's a deal in the works here after this, or what's going on with you?
Yeah, no. Listen, this is the one I'm proud of. I've been at this. This is my 20th year of writing thrillers. And listen, I don't think getting a good review means you're the best, or a bad review means you're the worst. It's just people's opinions. But in 20 years, the hardest thing to get is what they call a starred review. And Publishers Weekly's like Variety reviews books way early before anyone gets them. It kind of sets the tone for the book.
Right.
And 20 years later, This is the first review I got a starred review on. And again, it's not that it's a big deal, but it's just, I love the idea that 20 years in, you're still learning. We're still getting better. We can all do the same thing we do every day, but man, strive for more. And that's what it was here. Is I'm hustling because I'm like, I'm so proud and I want people to read this one. You know, it has one of my favorite historical, and I know you're a history man. I found this. This is craziness. In 1898, a man named John Elbert Wilkie is put in charge of the U.S. Secret Service. And he's a magician. He's actually a friend of Harry Houdini. And he's also loves doing magic tricks himself. It's the only time in history that a magician is in control of the Secret Service. And I friggin' love that man. Right? Like, that's it. That's sure. Page one of the escape artist. That's page one. And I found out that Houdini was so obsessed with death that he used to give all of his loved ones real code words so that if they died and they came back to life and there was a seance, Houdini would know, like, oh my gosh, you use the code word only you and I know, it's really you. And the code word, this is craziness, but the code word that he left for his mother, because he gave it to his friends, yep. His mom, you know, the one he gave to his mother, whose death he never got over, was this simple word, which was supposedly forgive. Forgive, yeah. Right? And we all have disasters. You know, Nola, who's, you know, the lead of the book, and Zig, who's the guy who works at Dover's, the lead of the book, they all have disasters in their life. Houdini has one in his life. We all have disasters, whether it's addiction, whether it's abuse, the loss of a loved one. We all have those things that put us in a crater. But we got to come out, man, right? We got to climb out and come back to life. And the only way to do that is what Houdini said, right? Forgive. We got to forgive, starting with ourselves. And, you know, that's where the whole escape artist as a book kind of came together for me. I was like, I got it.
I love this. Combines so many great things. I love Houdini. I love your stories. I love the way you write. It's so interesting, and the fact that this all has a little of everything in together, and of course the history of the whole deal. And Houdini also kind of ruined it for me, because now I'm convinced that there is no afterlife, or if there is, there are strict rules about contacting living people, because no one ever came through with Houdini's code word.
Says you, right? Who knows what Houdini? Houdini was like totally super crazy, and in fact, I one of the things that when I was doing the Houdini stuff, when we were filming Lost History, I found this out. This is just a crazy. I'm walking through this army museum, and they're showing me these paintings in their collection. They have like paintings by Adolf Hitler, and like you want to see what Adolf Hitler can paint. Like this, you know, what does he paint?
Right.
All this crazy collection, and I'm like, why does the army have all this art? And one of the things I found is that since World War I, the Army, and this is true, has had a painter, an actual painter on staff, who races into the disasters as they happen. So whether it's the beaches of Normandy, whether it's Vietnam, whether it's 9/11, they've been there. No one knows about them. I didn't know about them. And I'm like, you're telling me that everyone else is racing in with guns blazing, and we've got someone racing in with nothing but paintbrushes in their pockets? And they said... I'm like, that's the craziest person in the world. I want to meet him and make him a character. I want to meet him. And they said to me, you mean her. You want to meet her. And I was like, oh, crap, it's a woman. And right there, my character, Nola, my badass character, was born. I was like, you know, she is just a killer, right? And she sees, all artists see the world differently. So she sees, when she sees you, she sees which way your belt buckle is facing, because she knows if you're right or left-handed now. She sees that you have crow's feet on only one of your eyes, because you're a hunter and that's your aiming eye. She sees that when you walk past a reflective surface, you always check your reflection because you're vain. She sees your weakness. That's what Nola sees. She can always see your weakness, and she's just like a murderer for it. And I love this character. You know, it kind of came up as the time I was doing all this research. And, you know, you take these details. Anyone who's run into a disaster, you know, is running from a disaster. And suddenly you mix it with a little Houdini, and you know, it just thematically all kind of came together.
For me. I got to tell you, I was sold already, and you sell it so well.
Yeah.
The book is called The Escape Artist. It's by Brad Meltzer, who is joining us now. Would you say you owe all of your writing expertise and everything to, I don't know, let's say a journalist, a teacher in high school?
I'll tell you my two secrets, right? 20 years of doing this, you can either do the same thing or try and change. And you've heard me tell the story. I owe my career to my high school English teacher, because she changed my life with three words. She said, you can write.
Right.
And, you know, she tried to put me in an honors class. I had some sort of conflict, and she's like, here's what we're going to do. You're going to sit in the corner for the entire year. ignore everything I do on the blackboard, do the honors work instead. And what she was really saying was, you're going to thank me later. And 10 years later, I went back to her classroom. You know, I'm a Florida boy, you know that, right by, you know, down in Miami.
Right.
And I went back to her classroom. I knocked on the door 10 years later. And she said, can I help you? I said, my name is Brad Meltzer. I wrote this book and it's for you. And she starts crying. I'm like, why are you crying?
Yeah.
She's like, I was going to retire this year because I didn't think I was having an impact anymore. And I'm like, are you crazy? You have 30 students. We have one teacher. But here, this is a story, Mike. I never tell anyone, but I'm going to tell you this, you know, like hometown stuff is important. This is my one secret for what she taught me and what I learned.
Okay.
And, you know, 20 years into this, when I got my first book, I submitted it to 24 publishers. 22 of them sent me rejection letters, and we were waiting on the last two. And those were supposedly supposed to say yes because they liked the book. They interviewed me. They told me they were going to maybe make an offer. And my agent said to me, sit by the phone. It was pre-cell phone. She said, and I'm going to call you and tell you what the offers are. I think they're going to bid against each other. You're going to be rich. And I was like, I had no money, right? My family was like, I had debt to pay off. So I'm waiting to be told I'm rich, and I pick up the phone. And she says to me, sorry, kiddo. And they rejected it too. It was done. My book never got published. Like, it was still sits on my shelf, never published. But to this day, this is true, for 20 years straight, I've never missed one. Every day that I sit down to write, every day I sit down to work, before I touch, you know, start writing or anything or do any work, I repaint that picture of where I was in that moment. I picture the phone that I was on talking to her. It was one of those see-through phones where you could see the wires inside.
Right.
High-tech back then. I picture the desk that was on my left from Formica's desk. I picture the bed and the box spring that was all we had on the right. I picture the terrace that I was looking over and the fire station that I was looking at had three doors. And I say those words to myself, sorry, kiddo. Sorry, kiddo.
Oh.
Sorry, kiddo. For 20 years, man, never missed a work day. And it's so I never want to forget what it's like to be 24 years old and want to write the best book in the world to show everyone. I would never want to forget how lucky I am to have this job. I never want to forget how to be as hungry as I was back then. And I certainly never want to ever think I made it. Because if I make it and I think that,
that's when you're done.
Finished, man.
That's when you're done. You become complacent and you feel like, I've already done it.
Totally agree.
That is very inspiring. Do you recall a teacher named Mr. Ferguson?
Oh, you know Ferg?
I don't, but he is on the phone line with us right now. Mr. Ferguson, say hello to Brad Meltzer.
Oh, no way.
Hey, Brad, congratulations on the new book, buddy. Well done.
Let me tell you the story of this man. This is the man, this is my newspaper teacher, who gave me my first story ever published anywhere. And I got to use our famous joke is I tried to use on Seth Meyers. I told him that I was going to try to use the word juggernaut because he let me use the word juggernaut and made me feel very important.
He went with penis instead.
On the line. Yeah, I went with penis instead of juggernaut. But I will tell you that this is the man who took a chance on me and gave me my first published work. I owe him forever. One of my favorite teachers of all time.
Now, Ferg, how does that make you feel? I mean, you know that Brad had something that you were like, I'm just being nice to this kid.
No, you know what? Brad had a lot of great teachers, a lot of cogs in the wheel, and I was just one. I'm honored to have been his first publisher, but I had a lot of great students, and the fact that I got to publish his first work is an honor for me. His wife, Corey, incidentally, was in my yearbook class while Brad was in the newspaper class. So love was blooming there at North Miami Beach High School.
That's so funny.
Let me tell you something. Now, he's being modest. Let me tell you something. Ferg, this is what happened. Let me also tell you, by the way, the funniest Ferg story ever, because this is fantastic. So two things. So one is, you know, I did have many good teachers, but not all of them took a chance on me. And
right.
The ones that did, I used to think years later, it was because, you know, they were such good teachers, which they were. But the reason they were such good teachers is because they knew I needed help. Like my parents, I was the first in my family to go to a four-year college. And those teachers that, you know, there were plenty of kids that were just fine. Their parents went to college. They knew what they were doing. They knew how to take the SAT. What Ferg did and what Miss Spicer did for me, and I had my triumvirate was I had my history teacher too. They knew I needed help and they gave it to me. And that's why I owe him forever. But here's the best Ferg story is he took us to New York. He was Ferg. How old were you? You had to be like 22 or 23 at the time.
22. Yeah.
He was 22 years old. He's a fresh, brand new teacher. And he took us to New York to a big newspaper yearbook convention. And here we are from Florida kids going to New York for the big convention. I never tell this story. And we go to, we're supposed to go to a Rangers game.
Oh.
And now Ferg is, you know, Ferg's from North Carolina. He's like, you know, like first time in New York. And I don't know if it was first time or like early time in New York. And back then we're scalping tickets. There was no StubHub.
Right.
And the scalper says, we're trying to buy like 30 tickets, which is like hundreds of dollars. And the scalper says, take your money, put it in this Dunkin' Donuts bag. And then you're going to meet us down this alley.
Oh.
And you're going to give us the Dunkin' Donuts bag. We're going to take our tickets and put them in the Dunkin' Donuts bag, and we're going to trade bags.
Welcome
and
to New York.
And I'm from New York originally in Brooklyn, so they send me and Ferg together. Like, I'm supposed to be like the streetwise kid, but I'm a child, and he's 22. And we walk into this alley, and I'm like, and I say to them, I'm like, Ferg, man, don't, you know, you can't trust these guys, and they know. They separate us because they're like, this kid knows what's going on.
Right.
They separate us. They tell Ferg. And now I'm like, oh, my gosh. And Ferg, I don't hear from for like 15 minutes. I'm like, and I come back to the group and I'm like, Ferg's dead. and so now they go back. And to his credit, he knew he was being scammed. And so he did not trust the mugger who was making him go down the alley. He saved the day. And we all got to go to the Rangers game thanks to Ferg, who was truly one of the greatest teachers I ever had.
I love it. That's awesome. I hope you you appreciate that as a teacher. I think I told this last time you're on the air. I contacted a teacher that I had in high school because I didn't do very well as a student, but I had one teacher who kind of steers you in the right direction and tells you, hey man, don't listen to what all these other idiots are telling you. And that I think goes the longest way with you. And I always give teachers the credit. Way underpaid. Now they want you to start carrying guns. I don't know why anybody would do it these days, but good job, Ferg.
Thank you so much, guys.
All right, good talking to you. There you go.
I love you.
All right. There you go.
You too, buddy.
That is what you get. You are, by the way, Mike, you are always one of my favorites. I'm going to make you a character in the next book. That was good stuff.
There you go.
Listen, I was going to make you hold out because I know there's a, I'm looking at all Inner Circle, President Shadow, House of Secrets. I'm looking at all the books right now. There's what's going to happen is they're going to grab one and they're going to make it a movie, and then they're going to be like, holy crap, we need to go and make five more movies of his books. And that's what's going to happen. Let me ask you, and I was going to demand a role in the movie. Let me ask you real quick. When you go on one of these trips for the troops and you say to entertain you and other thrill riders, what are you doing? You reading to them? You talking to them? Like, I always wish that I could do something. Like, I wish they would call me and say, hey, we want you to broadcast from Afghanistan for the troops, but I don't think the troops would care that I was there. They don't know who I am, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the funny part is, and again, I wasn't joking, it was the groups that went out before us in Kuwait and the Middle East was the Dallas Cowboy Cheerleaders, the MMA Fighters, and then here come the writers.
Right, so if I were you, I'd be like, oh man, how do we follow this?
Right, of course, my buddy was like, can you tape the audible sigh when you walk in the room and they realize, right, like that they went from the cheerleaders to the illiterate people. But here's the thing is I just did another tour. We just came back from one about 6 weeks ago. We went to one in Cuba and they asked me to go again. And what we do every time, I mean, two things. One, the troops read thrillers. That's the only books that they really allow over there.
Right.
You know, that's what they read. But two, I never read, you know, we sign books. I talk about Decoded. I talk about Lost History. I talk about The Escape Artist. And the funny thing is there are plenty of guys who come up to us and they say this. They say, you know, yeah, we love the country singers that come. We love the cheerleaders that come. But you're the first group that's come for us because we love to read. So obviously it's a different kind of entertainment that we do.
But they do enjoy meeting you. Sure. It's like that's their life. So you're a big time celebrity to them. They love that.
Listen, this is my favorite troop story. This is a career, again, I never get to tell this, but you're doing, this is going to be like my favorite interview I've done on all tour.
Good.
This is right after 9/11. A member of the military contacts me. He was a sailor on a submarine. He says, I can't tell you where I am. Secret location. He says, but it's right after 9/11. We don't have a lot of, books on our submarine, but we have one of your books, Brad. And it just brought me a lot of calm in this time when I need it. And I thought, that's the nicest thank you I ever got. I got to do something nice for this troop, for this member of the military. So I call my publisher. I say, can I get 10,000 books donated to the USO? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, man, that was easy. So I call another and another and another. We get 40,000 books donated to the USO. So now I get involved with the USO. I go to Kuwait. I go to, you know, Oman. I go to all these places around the globe with the USO. And when I get there, one of the members of the military says, hey, Brad, I want to thank you for those books you donated all those years ago. And I'm like, how would you possibly know that? We, you know, almost nobody knows that. And he said, I used to be in Iraq and Afghanistan, and I would see stats of your books that would say courtesy of the USO, so I know you had to have donated them. And I'm like, wait. I'm like, you can't be thanking me. I'm thanking you. So I come back from the tour, and here's the key part. I got to track down that original sailor and thank him because he set this all in motion. So I track him down, and I find him, and I say, listen, I don't know if you remember me, but 10 years ago you wrote me an email. My name is Brad Meltzer, and I just want to tell you what you set in motion, all this stuff, because of your thank you. And I figure he's going to be really inspired, and the phone is dead silent. You know when you're on the phone with someone, you know something's wrong.
Right.
And I say, are you okay? And he says, no. And I said, what's wrong? And he said, my mother died a few days ago from breast cancer.
Ugh.
And I said, and what he has no idea of is my mother had just died from breast cancer.
Wow.
And I said to him, I think I'm here to deliver a message for you. And he says, what's the message? And I said, well, my mom died. Everyone gave me useless advice, but one person gave me something that really helped me, and I think I'm here to tell it to you. And he said, what's the message? And I said, our mothers never leave us, ever. And he starts crying. And because he's crying, I'm getting emotional. And I'm not one of those people who thinks, like, you know, rainbows and unicorns and New Agey stuff, like, happening like crazy and make the world a better place.
Right.
But sometimes we feel alone in the universe, and sometimes we realize we're profoundly connected. So, man, I'm telling you, go say thank you to that teacher that took a chance on you, like Mr. Ferguson. You know, go say thank you to that person who gave you your first real job, the first person who told you you were good at something. You know, Steve Ferguson changed my life. Go say thank you to him. Whoever it is today, take today and go do it. It will always pay you back, man.
Also, not that you plan for it, but consider how much your actions impact other people's lives. Things that you think are little that go such a long way. And I'm not a very religious guy, but I do believe in that sort of cosmic connection, and that's very interesting. I don't know how a guy like you stays as grounded as you are. I lay in bed sometimes, and I can't sleep because I can't turn it off.
Yeah.
Well, he said penis.
I was gonna say, are you about to tell me that you lay in bed and think of me?
You're a little too tiny for me. But no, seriously, I wonder what goes through your head. Because you got characters and storylines, like, you seem like your brain never shuts off.
Yeah, no, for me, you know what the thing is I can't, right? Like, I actually have to use, like, that ritual that I told you about to kind of take myself somewhere, because my brain, you know, our greatest strength is always our greatest weakness. Like, my best strength is, you know, my brain is just running, right? Like, I can take that Harry Houdini story and find a spot for it. You know, I found that Harry Houdini, this is one I never tell, but, like, Harry Houdini had his own secret service, right? And what he used to do, when he used to do his tricks, he'd come to town, and the secret service would come to town 2 weeks earlier.
Right.
They would check what kind of handcuffs the cops would have. They would check what kind of locks are on the jail door. And then Harry Houdini would come to town, and he would say, like, I'm Harry Houdini. Lock me in your jail. I will escape immediately. And, like, of course he could, because his little secret service gave him the key 2 weeks earlier. And I'll sit in bed for a month trying to figure out how do I work that into a book. I can't shut it off. I'm thinking of it at all times. And, you know, and obviously our greatest strength is that, but it's our greatest weakness too, because I can't shut it off.
No.
And, you know, that's why you got to find rituals and things like that to kind of quiet your brain.
And manifest it into a best-selling novel if you can. This is Brad Meltzer. The book is called The Escape Artist. It's available now. If you ordered it from Amazon like I did, you get it in a day and a half. It come right to your door. I don't recommend a lot of books to people, but I guarantee you'll enjoy this. And also, if you're somebody who has kids, Brad's got a series of books, Heroes for My Son, Heroes for My Daughter, and then individual stories about Amelia Earhart, Abraham Lincoln, Martin Luther King. Great way to introduce these people to your kids. He's a good guy and a great author. It's always good to talk to you, my man.
Dude, this was the best interview. The fact you got Steve Ferguson, one of the greatest teachers I had, on the phone, like, I was in tears when I heard his voice.
Oh, good. Oh, I like that. And you said that you would put me in the next book, and if you don't, I have it on tape, and I will sue you.
That is good. I appreciate that, and as a lawyer, I will take that case and sue myself with you.
Great talking to you. Good luck with the book, The Escape Artist by Brad Meltzer. It is available everywhere now. Good luck, my man.
Thanks, brother. Love you guys. You're the best.
See you, pal. There you go. What a good dude.
Yeah, that would be cool. I mean, that sounds like a great book. The last book sounded like a great book. Like, if they make it into a movie, like you said, the way they did with Dan Brown, they're like, hey, he's got other books. John Grisham, same way.
All those Hunt for an October movie, the Clancy books.
Yeah.
And the good thing about, he may incorporate himself into the books and other characters, but he is a little bald guy, and he is like the least military looking guy you see, which kind of like Clancy did with the character that Harrison Ford played in Ben
Jack
Affleck,
Ryan.
Jack Ryan, where he's not a military guy, but he's in these situations, and he's so smart that it works, and I could see that happening here too. He's a good dude, man. And he's so positive. After you'd hear him talk, you're like, yes, I want to go do some stuff.
The Mike Calta Show on 102.5 The Bone.